Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics from the Missouri State Fair, joined by the 57th governor of the great state of Missouri, Governor Parson. Thank you for joining us.
Scott, great to be here. Always great to be at the Missouri State Fair.
And you got it back up and running, and it's better than ever. New buildings, new stuff. It's like they never missed a beat.
You know what? It's just great to come back and see all the exhibitors are here, all the livestock that's here, and just to see people in general. I mean, people are generally just happy. State Fair's back going, and people are back out and just enjoying life. And I think that's been one of the most rewarding times I've had today, just walking around the fairgrounds and everything. So exciting times. Good time for the State Fair to be open.
And you got to admit, you've touched on something. Every time we've ever talked, we brought about one thing, rural broadband.
Right.
Tell folks what the plan is.
You know what? First of all, it's just a great day. We were able to announce a $400 million expansion in broadband, the largest in our state's history. And I've said many times, I said, if we can get light bulbs in every house, lighting in every house, we can get broadband in every house. And this is a major step for our state, especially rural Missouri, to have that kind of investment. And I do mean reliable broadband that we can get to a lot of small towns and people that don't have it. There's no reason we can't compete as farmers, as business owners. Just because you live in a small town, you shouldn't be punished because of that in today's times and technology.
Let's talk about something that's on everybody's mind. It's COVID. It seems like it doesn't go away. But I've seen folks that have you get a little bit of help. A little bit of folks in the cities want to help you, give you a little advice.
Right.
But it seems to me in this state, let me just ask you, can you get a vaccine if you want one right now?
There's no question. People walk past the vaccine every day. Yeah. If you want a vaccine, you can get it. I think what's always been the issue is balancing out freedom and letting people make their own choices. And I think that's fundamentally something I did from day one, to let people make the decisions, what's best for them. I talked to some people today earlier, and I said, look, here's what you ought to do. Just kind of get all the clutter out of all the things that are being said. And who do you really go to when you feel like an illness in your family? Who's the first person you go to? You go to a doctor. And I encourage people, just go to your doctor and ask them. And then you make a judgment what's best for you and your family.
Interesting to me, you know, I view it as your job to make sure those vaccines are out there.
Right.
And they are.
Most certainly.
You've been vaccinated, so was the First Lady. You've told folks, you've encouraged folks. I don't know what more you can do.
Well, you know what the reality of it is? At some point, personal responsibility has to come in. And you can't just depend on government to tell you everything to do all the time. That's probably the worst road we can go down. At some point, everyone in this state right now, for the most part, knows what the situation is. They know where the vaccine's at. They know the risk, the known risk of what to do. It's the point right now they've got to decide whether they want a vaccine or not. And I think in fairness to the general public, it's like everybody thinks we ought to all be vaccinated already. The vaccine hasn't been available to the general public for less than 6 months. And it seems like it's been a long time. But just try vaccinating 6 million people. It's going to take a while to get through that process. And I think everybody wants it to be like a light switch. But it's never going to be that way because not everybody's going to get vaccinated.
So help me out. My dad, back in West Butler County, got his vaccine pretty quick. Right. My mama will not hear of it. Help me out. How do you convince Terry Vaughn in West Butler County to get her vaccine?
Yeah, I think what's going to convince her, if she is to be convinced, it'll be people she knows, people that's had to deal with the virus, that's had to deal with it, and some effect it's had personally in their lives. I think you're starting to see that now across the state. We're all starting to know somebody that's had it, and we're also now seeing this Delta in all our small communities and realize, hey, this is the real deal. But I think that's how somebody like her, if she's been hesitant to do that, I think it'll be a matter of just the reality of saying, when I lose a friend, when something happens to somebody I know, to realize, I wonder if that vaccine would have prevented that.
All right, so there's a bunch of kids started school this week.
Yeah.
A bunch more in St. Louis will start school tomorrow. If you're a kid and you've got a school board who's decided you have to wear a mask, I have been a supporter of yours on local control. I think it's been great.
Right.
At what point when you try to get a 5-year-old kid and think they're going to wear a mask all day, when does local control and common sense just start butting heads?
Well, I think that's a perfect example you're going to see on that. You know, I've always been a local control guy all along, and I've never changed on that. But I think the reality is you got to realize what is the real effect of these children, whether they wear a mask or whether they don't wear a mask. And I think you got to really see what the science is behind that and how that adjusts. So I think trying to make a 5-year-old kid wear a mask all day, I think practically it's going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah.
I do. And again,
are you considering at all stepping in and helping those school kids out and saying, you know, we've let the school boards, but there is a point where, you know, it's one of those things where if you live in St. Louis, the government's going to tell you a lot of what to do.
Yeah.
If you live in Bolivar, they're not.
Right.
But like
in
Wheatland, There's no mask ordinance.
Yeah.
There's no mask orders. Right. But would you step in? A kid can't leave St. Louis. Yeah. He gets where his parents are. Are you going to step in and help him?
Yeah, the perfect example you just brought up, Scott, is how much different it is in my hometown of Bolivar versus St. Louis. Yeah. You've seen what happened in St. Louis County, and I think you're headed down this same road. For number one, I think the legislators need to be involved in that decision process. When St. Louis County overstepped their boundaries, which I believe they did, what happened? Legislative action was taken. People understood that, says, no, that's not right. We're going to do that. Now, as governor, you have a lot of powers. But again, I think it's really important that you get the voice of everybody in the state that has a stake in this. And each legislator, no matter where they're from, has a say in this to represent that. So I think it's important to have that input. And when they did make a change, we signed that change in because of exactly what happened.
Your law seemed to work. In St. Louis City, they had a mask mandate. Apparently, the public supported it. Their legislative body hasn't overturned it. In the county, I don't think it had the public support. Obviously, the legislative body didn't support it.
Right.
But there's no check on the school board.
Yeah. Right.
Well, would you consider at any point coming in and saying, look, you're not going to mask a poor little kid just because he happens to live in St. Louis?
Yeah, you know what? Hypothetically, you can look at all those situations. Just like that situation, when that balance tips, then yes, you're going to step in and you're going to probably do something at that point. I think we all look at that. You know, but again, I'm a firm believer in local control. I want the local people to take care of that as much as possible. And I want to make sure they defend it one way or the other, or they oppose it. When you've seen what happened in St. Louis County, exactly what happened. People flooded that council meeting and the executive director up and says, hey, this is not what we want. We're not going to do it. And they stopped it. And you'd like to see that type of action go. But I think if you just say you did all of that and it's still not working, still people are abusing their powers, then yes, I think sometimes at some point you got to step in.
It's interesting to me, you know, you've been at every level of this. If I had to guess, the real end result of trying to make a 7-year-old kid wear a mask all day is going to be some things that fundamentally change Missouri public schools. It's going to hit your desk. And if I had to guess, you may see something that checks the ability to force masks, but you're going to see a lot of other changes that have nothing related to that. I think there's a shift. It's been rural folks that have kind of made public schools be left alone. I think they're eroding that trust.
Well, I don't think there's any question what we've seen over the last year, some of the changes that you've seen, some of the votes and some of the bills that come out of the legislature this year. Might not have happened if it hadn't have been strictly for some of the mandates that were across the state and how some of the schools were. But I also think it's important, Scott, to remember that 95% of the schools did the right thing. You know, the vast majority of the people in the state, the schools did the right thing. They went back to school. They had kids in the classroom. And look, the bottom line is you got to have a kid in a classroom. And, you know, that should be the number one goal. You know, the mask debate is a mask debate to have it, but the point of it is kids need to be in a classroom setting. They need to be getting an education, and they also need to be there for a safety net. Good, bad, or indifferent, those schools are a lot of places those kids have all the place they got that they're somewhat secure in their lifetime for just a little bit.
Tell me about the Medicaid decision. Looks like the process has been fully vetted, worked out. Right now, are you planning to enroll these folks and let them sign on to the dole?
Yeah, most certainly. I've been around a long time in law enforcement. You know, I don't always agree with the judges of whether decisions they make, but a court order is a court order. Court order says, hey, governor, this is my job as a judge to tell you to do this. And that's what we're going to do. The Supreme Court voted unanimous against what we believe was hoping they wouldn't do, but they did. And for the governor of the state of Missouri, I got to follow the law, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Last thing, you know a little bit about cattle prices.
Yeah.
It just seems like they go up and up, and it sometimes doesn't even seem like the cattle price meets the price that goes up at the when you go to buy it at the store. Their price is tripled. What is is there any going to be any change for either Missouri farmers to sell their cattle at a better price, or the price going to come down?
Well, I hope for the consumer it goes down, but I also hope for the producer it goes up.
Yeah.
Where it is, where we're talking about is the middle guys. You know, what it costs when you sell that hoof, that calf off the hoof, you know, to a slaughter company or something. You see what you're making for it, whether that's $1.60 or $1.80 a pound, depending on what the weight of it is or less. But then you see at the grocery store, it's $9 a pound.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever it is. Huge difference between the farmer and by the time it gets to your table on that. Well, we would need what the big concern is, I think, is you got just multiple large processing plants in the United States that you don't want them to be able to just have a monopoly on the market. It's one of the reasons that we promoted the small business processing plants in the state of Missouri to give cattle farmers more option to sell their beef and have it processed and sell it right here in the state of Missouri. And if you look in the grocery stores now, I mean, a lot of the major grocery stores, you'll see Missouri beef on those shelves giving people opportunity. that's how sometimes you beat the big companies out of trying to figure out you don't have a monopoly. It's about competition. But we got to make sure they're not doing things to fix the prices of beef and whether it's any other company to be able to do that. And I think we're all suspect of that, or we're suspicious of that. And the federal government, we've been pretty loud and vocal about that here in Missouri. You need to look into some of these major companies.
Last question.
Yeah.
You got that little kid, your constituent. Let's just say hypothetically he's a 5-year-old little German Cardinal fan. And he just says he ain't wearing a mask.
Yeah.
What happens to him?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you something about a 5-year-old. I like kids a lot better than I do adults. So I'm just telling you that right now. I want to be on the show on that. You know, I'm not going to make a 5-year-old kid wear a mask. I'm just not. You know, if a kid wants to go to a ball game, he goes to a ball game. If that's the requirement, then I probably wouldn't go to the ball game.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it is. You know, supply and demand will take care of some of this at some point. Some people will push the limit too far. If you're a private business, people are going to say, hey, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to do business with that. You know, and I think that's all part of the process.
Is that going to get applied to education if they make that 5-year-old kid wear a mask and go to school?
Again, I'm going to say what I've said all along. I think if that gets to be all across the state, I think there'll be adjustment to that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Governor,
but, you know, we'll see.
Thank you so much for your time, and congratulations. The fair is back, and it's better than ever, probably.
No, it's a great time. Got to see the Beach Boys last night, so that was kind of fun for me.
And Uncle Jesse came out. How about that?
Yeah, I tell you what, it was a big deal, and you just get to go around and see a lot of people here today. You know, Missouri's getting back on its feet. We just got to keep moving forward, and that's exactly what we're doing. And we're going to get through this. It's just going to take some a little bit of time to get through it, but I guarantee you Missouri will be better off than most states in the United States.
Governor, appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Scott. Thank you.
We'll be right back. The best MC of political events ever seen, Mike Dearing, will be with us after this.
All across Missouri, our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads, because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right-to-work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work. Ameren, Missouri.
Welcome back to This Week in Missouri Politics. We're here at the State Fair here at the Co-ops building. Right as you come up to the State Fair, it's right there on that First Street, one of the prettier buildings here, all kinds of innovation stuff going on like you'll see behind me. Come check it out for yourself. We're here with Mark Wolf, the man that makes this whole place work. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
Garrett Hawkins, the president of Rural Missouri. Appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
Mike Dearing, Missouri cattleman, professional MC. Glad to have you back, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And a name that I've known my whole life I could read, a name that every Rural Missourian gets the big Rural Missourian magazine sent to them, every co-op member, Jim McCarty. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate
it. Glad to be here.
Mark, tell me, so had a fair last year, scaled down. You revved it right back up. It feels like you didn't miss a lick. That couldn't have been an easy transition.
Well, you know, we think we hit a lick. You know, it's 2 years between a full fair. You think you're going to miss some things here and there. Yeah. We probably did. Hopefully the fairgoers don't notice that. You know, we're excited about being back. You know, we did do the Youth Livestock, as you mentioned, last year, which was a great event. Gosh, I think our entries were up in our Youth Livestock categories about 12%. Came back this year and, you know, opened it back up as a full-scale fair with our open shows and everything else. Numbers have been outstanding. You know, we had some work done on the fairgrounds where we expanded some campgrounds.
Tell me some stuff that's new here at the
fair. Yeah, well, and I didn't mean to get ahead of you there a little bit, but they really got to use that last year, Scott. You know, they the folks that came in, and then this year with all the open shows back on site, we ran out of campsites again, and so it tells you kind of where we're headed. I think that the numbers just keep growing, and it's hard to keep up with.
Mike Deering, I noticed the line at the Kettleman's restaurant was still out. It's all the way out, all the way down the sidewalk, and then back around by the tree.
You bet.
About like it was every year, right?
Yeah, no, we're excited. Again, Mark's done a fabulous job getting us back, and we're excited to have customers who want beef, and we're willing to do what it takes to get that on the plate.
I remember being a kid, and now it's more of a slick magazine, but like you said, it used to be you didn't throw it away because you started a fire with it. The big Rural Missouri magazine, you've always told folks what happens at the fair. It's kind of just goes together, Rural Missouri magazine and the fair.
Well, and absolutely. In our very first edition in 1948, if you look at the August issue, stamped on the front, State Fair Edition. So we've always been part of the fair, and I just love it. I'm really happy to be here. It's a great time in Missouri.
Garrett, is there a place to see more of your members come through anywhere in the state than the State Fair?
Probably not. I mean, honestly, Scott, my first State Fair experience was Farm Bureau Day with my grandparents when I was a little kid. I remember Grandma packing a picnic lunch, and we set out by the old historic gate under a tree. And I don't know why I was the grandchild that was the favorite that day, but I felt so important. And that was where my love for the fair began and why I'm so pleased that we still have Farm Bureau and Farm Family Day that we just celebrated on this past Monday.
So you had folks over at the Farm Bureau building today, some of the state's top leaders, all talking about rural issues. And there's not a bigger rural issue that affects every single person than rural broadband. There was some cool announcements. Tell folks, where's that at right now?
Yeah, so the governor announced this morning at the ham breakfast as well as at our press event that the state's going to infuse about $400 million into broadband. And I think for all of us here, we can agree that that truly is a game changer.
Yeah.
When you think about the resources that we have needed for some time, now it's a matter of working with the governor and his team and the legislature to execute a plan ultimately to get those dollars deployed in a way that provides the reliable, affordable access that Missourians have been calling for some time.
Mike Deering, I think this gets done, right? I mean, who's going to be against this?
Yeah, you don't have many opponents when you start talking about this. And when you look at agriculture as a whole, the average age of a farmer is 60 years old. We need the next generation. We need to repopulate the land with new faces. And we can't do that without high-speed internet access.
You know, Mark, I bought my Beach Boys tickets this time on my phone. But I could do that because I had broadband in the office, right?
That's right.
If I was in West Butler County, you couldn't buy your Beach Boys tickets online. If you did, it would take you a long, long, long time to get that hamster to run hard enough. It changes everything.
It does. It does. You know, technology is getting away from us a little bit, I think, you know, here at the fairgrounds and in the rural community, like you say. So it's a big deal. And, you know, the governor's announcement today was a really big deal.
Mr. Riccardi, it feels like to me, the tip of the spear for rural broadband has been the co-ops. You have a lot of other small companies that are out and some larger ones doing rural broadband. But if you look overall, the folks that are leading the way is kind of the co-ops.
You know, that's right. There's a little town, it's not even a town, not even on the map, called Tick Creek. It's south of Rolla.
I think I swam in Tick Creek before.
If you were thinking about it, Tick Creek would be the last place on earth you would expect to get high-speed broadband. Very soon, Gasco Sage Electric Cooperative is going to fully wire Tick Creek. The Boot Heel, Missouri, everyone knows poverty is high there, unemployment's high. The biggest agriculture region in the state, am I right, guys?
Yes.
Very soon, the entire Boot Heel from Cape Girardeau down to the Arkansas line is going to have high-speed internet. We're not talking internet, just good internet. We are talking gigabit internet, the best you can get in the world.
You know, Garrett, it's interesting to me. I got a buddy of mine, and you can tell at his farm where cell service and his broadband ends because the tractor runs off a satellite connected to all these things, I guess. But when it stops, the roads get a little crooked.
Yep.
It is that tied into what we do. You know?
It is that tied in, and it's intertwined in our communities. So if I think about our rural hospital, we're one of the smallest critical access hospitals. Okay, we have the technology to do telemedicine.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the bandwidth with the broadband that's available in Appleton in order to deploy the technology in a way that provides a satisfactory service for the provider or the patient. And our biggest need is probably behavioral health. accessing mental health resources because we don't have enough provider capacity in our rural area. So the opportunity is tremendous, but we've got to have that backbone first, and we're not the only community. You repeat that all across the state.
All right, Mike. As you can probably tell, a little bit of me. I'm a top consumer of your members' products.
I want to clarify that meat does not make you fat.
I don't know what that says. My mom will tell you I'm big bone. So when you look right now, I mean, what are we, triple the price of when you buy it at the store?
Oh yeah.
But now when you sell cattle, it's up a little bit, but it ain't triple the price.
No.
What's going on?
Well, so, you know, you had two black swan events. You had the Tyson fire a couple years ago, then you had the COVID pandemic, and just two perfect storms that just really showed how volatile the food supply chain is, especially in the beef industry. And when you look at cattle producers, I mean, we're price takers, we're not price makers. Mm-hmm. And in the retail markets, they were kind of stuck in the same boat that we were as well. And then the consumers and the producers both were hurt the worst. But what we need is we need market transparency, we need price discovery, because you got packers making record unprecedented
profits. That's what the governor just talked
while
about.
While we're sitting on the ground counting pennies, and it's unacceptable, and it has to be.
What do you do about that?
To do that.
Describe what those things
are. So we're working with Congresswoman Vicky Hartzler, as well as Senator Deb Fischer. Farm Bureau is involved in this as well at the national level and state level to try and mandate some negotiated cash trade. We hate mandates, but it is proven after 25 years of LMR that we have to have some mandates and some government intervention here to mandate those minimum levels, but not extreme. It's going to be regional. It's going to be plant by plant. It's going to be level-headed and not extreme like the 5014 legislation from Senator Grassley. So it's going to be per plant. And then we're also looking at a data dump is what I call it. Right now, the formula transactions and everything that happens we can get in the weeds really quickly. None of that is public. It's not transparent. You don't know the true value of cattle because it's not reported. You don't know the distribution of profit or who's getting a bigger slice of the pie. So we have to have data out there so that producers can make sound decisions.
You believe right now that if you get a couple of those things, meat prices, either one of the two, either the meat price will come down or the cattlemen here in Missouri will sell their beef for more.
You know, the transparency piece is the biggest. You know,
yeah.
We can talk about the mandates, but if that information, that data is available, yes, I do believe that.
Ricardo,
it'll be a slow, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, and legislation, nothing in D.C. happens overnight, but if we can get some of those modest changes done, yeah, it'll help cattle producers.
It does affect the dinner table. I mean, it's not just beef, it's everything's went up. I heard some about people telling me inflation wasn't up, but I'm like, well, you ain't been to Poplar Bluff lately. Inflation's high. What's it cost to put dinner on the table at the Fawn household is higher. I'm sure the McCarty household, too.
Well, you know, those are the kind of things when you talk about the consumer price index and all that sort of thing. It's the things you can't do without that are getting more expensive.
Yeah.
And it's a problem you see all across the state.
Although, Mark, I did see that the line for the cattlemen was still out the restaurant around the corner.
Always is.
Yeah.
Always is.
I think you may goose that line, maybe, just so it looks.
I think they're circling around and coming back, getting there again, keep looking like that.
I would. I did too, but you'd expect that.
Yeah.
Garrett, talk to me about the death tax. That's something everybody lined up and talked about.
Yeah. Yep.
I thought it went away. It didn't.
We thought it did too.
it's
you know,
a lie.
It is a lie. From the standpoint that, you know, as I think about my 20-year career in ag policy, the time that we're living now just goes to show that there really isn't certainty when it comes to some issues. I mean, we have rehashed the importance of common sense, sound tax policy through the years. And now we see proposals at the federal level to potentially eliminate stepped-up basis or to put in place generational transfers. You know, we have an administration that says, well, we're not going to tinker with the quote-unquote estate tax or death tax. But everything they're doing says otherwise. They're just going about it in a different way. And so we have a dedicated webpage, don'ttaxdeath.com, and we are working, again, with our fellow ag groups to try to drive discussion and attention to the fact that with all the craziness going on in Washington, D.C., don't fund it on the backs of farm and ranch families as well as small business owners who are working hard every day to be able to bring home the next generation. That's why it's important to talk about it.
It's interesting. You know, your goal, your dream would be to build something up and leave to your children.
Absolutely.
I thought this was over. I guess it's not, though.
Yeah, absolutely not. And, you know, Garrett mentioned stepped up in bases. In our opinion, that's a bigger issue than even the death tax. I mean, eliminating that would be a game changer for farm and ranch families and would devastate and put people out of business, period. So,
Mr. McCarty, it's something you want to be able to pass something down to your children. And it's one of those things where, I mean, the government's had their hand in it every step of the way, your pocket. Like George, they kind of get in your casket now.
Well, that's sad, isn't it? But, you know, all across the state, people want to live in rural areas. And we need to get the burdens out of the way, these kind of things that prevent these generations from moving onto the family farms. I think really given the chance, and, you know, we've been talking about internet today, if you got a good internet connection, you got quality electricity to your home, why wouldn't you live in a rural area?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to. But there are just barriers in place that prevent people from moving out and doing the things that they want to do. So hats off to you guys for leading the way on these issues.
Mark, it's something to me. I love to bring Gussie here. It's one of my most fun afternoons of the year. He loves it. He comes back. He comes back. I don't have to ask him to go to bed. He's already in bed. He's dirty. He's hot. He's had the time of his life. It is, to me, the state fair. We talk about a death tax. It's something you do cherish. It's something you remember coming with your grandparents back in the day. Tell me, kind of the last question. You think about the fair and you think about things that you're able to share. Give me something that folks can come here and share with their family if they ain't been before.
You know, Scott, I think the fair is all about, you know, family memories and all those things. We talk to, that's part of what drives our marketing that we do, you know, is to reach out to those things and talk about, you know, what the fair means to families. We have a lot of folks at this fairgrounds that are watching their great-great-grandkids out here showing, and they've been coming here for 50, 60-plus years. You know, so there's a lot of history to the fair. It is important to people. You know, it is, you know, it's about agriculture. That's what this fair is about. It's what drives our state. Everybody is involved in agriculture, whether they know it or not. You know, if you eat, you're involved. And, you know, maybe just better educated. Maybe a chance at the fair to get educated about that. I think that's one of the things that people can get when they come to the fair. If they're not from a rural area, they're more urban and they don't maybe know where the milk comes from and how folks are farming folks, how good of stewards they are of the land and the things that they do to provide that food. So I think all those things can be learned at the fair. And at the same time, you know, so many of the folks that come to this fair every year have been coming for a long, long, long time.
Yeah. Guys, I want to thank you so much for visiting with you. Yeah. It's a terrific place to make memories. Appreciate the time. Want to specifically thank the folks here at the State Fair, the folks at the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops throughout the state, Caleb Jones and Nikki Roach for having us. Thank you guys very much. Very much enjoy the hospitality. We'll see you next week back in our studios on This Week in Missouri Politics.
This Week in Missouri Politics, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, SPIRE, and Sterling Bank.